wrong. It's actually 1 over r to the 6th times rs squared, okay, times factor of 12. And this is kind of obvious because the metric includes terms going like rs over r, okay? And if you remember some time ago, well, it has terms like 1 minus g goes like, g is dimensionless. The metric is always dimensionless, but it has terms going like 1 over r. And if you remember r mu nu rho lambda goes like two derivatives on the metric, d mu d rho g nu lambda, etc. So if I take two derivatives of rs over r, I get rs over r cubed. And then if I square it, I get rs over r to the sixth. So that's the right result. But none of the conclusions are changed. The other thing is I managed to slightly confuse myself on the radial light signals. The original sign I wrote down was correct. And so for the null rays inside R equals RS, there are two of them. And it should be plus, as I wrote down initially, log 1 minus R over RS. OK, this is for R less than RS. So just make sure you get that plus sign. What confused me is that when I was trying to sketch this, so we have some RS, T, and R, and these trajectories were doing this outside RS. Inside RS, they do this. Okay. And what was confusing me is if I take the plus sign here, it looks like T is going like R, okay, which makes you think it's going with a positive slope. But in fact, the log, you should also expand near small r. So if I expand this at small r, right, then this goes like r log of 1 minus x is minus x at small r. So I get minus r over rs times rs gives me a minus r. And then I get minus 1 half r over rs squared times rs. And so this expression here goes like minus r squared over 2rs at small r. Okay, and so that's this curve, actually. So the plus sign here is this curve. Goes like minus r squared. And then if you look at this near r equals rs, the log is negative. The log of a small number is minus a large number. So the log is negative. And so this, these null rays are diverging to t of minus infinity. OK, so this one is plus and that one is minus. It didn't affect anything subsequent because I never actually used that formula after that point. OK, so to remind you, we went to ingoing Eddington Finkelstein where we took the ingoing null ray. And then we defined this U, which was T plus R plus T plus R plus RS log R over RS minus 1. Okay. And then I defined U by putting a modulus sign around there, so it was always real. Okay. And that means the transformation from R and T to U is actually singular. Okay, and I, as I explained, you have to do a singular coordinate transformation if you're going to get a regular metric. So in these coordinates, then we set this u equal to t prime plus r, a new time where t prime is the new time. And in the new coordinates, the picture was the following, t prime and r, rs. And this time, the ingoing null trajectories are just at 45 degrees, because u is constant. So t prime goes like minus r plus a constant. This is u equals constant. U increases this way. And the null trajectories, let me draw them in a different color. The null, some chalk. Does anyone get colored chalk? Somebody seems to have pinched all the colored chalk. No. It's all been stolen. Okay, I'll do them in dashed lines for now. So, I'll do them in a wiggly line. So these are the ingoing null trajectories. Okay. And the outgoing ones look like this outside RS. They go like this. These are the this would be u equals constant. So the outgoing ones indeed go outwards, but if you continue this family of null trajectories, they end up going inwards. And this r equals rs is the trapped surface, and r equals rs is called the event horizon. Ah, great. Okay, let me do that again then. Okay, so let's start this again. Thanks. T prime r. We've got rs, and then we have ingoing null gd6. And then we have the outgoing null gd6 end up at 45 degrees out here. Okay. And then there's one that goes vertically straight up the diagram, and then the rest of them bend over. Okay, so because you should really think of this as a three-dimensional, three plus one-dimensional picture, three space and one time, actually where these null rays cross is a light cone. And so this is the future-pointing light cone. And no particle can escape from the light cone. To escape from the light cone, it would have to go faster than light. And so you can see that any particle, when it crosses r equals rs, is condemned to move, is unable to ever escape from the from the black hole. Let's put another one in here. Okay, so basically what happens as you cross r equals rs is the light cones tip inwards, and any particle is forced to head towards singularity. Okay. So when you form a star, as I explained, the surface of the star is comprised of massive particles which have to follow a time-like trajectory. And so on this diagram, the surface of the star looks something like that. The particles always move within the future light cone. And so the star does something like this. And then outside the star, the space-time is so bent that anything outside the star has to actually, once it crosses RS, has to hit singularity. Okay, so we worked out the metric in those coordinates, and it had no singularities at R equals RS. Now, I'll show you something even more peculiar about this metric. I mean, we've essentially discovered a new region of space-time, okay, inside R equals RS just by changing coordinates to ones which remove the singularity. So if we go back to the beginning of this section, you remember that the two families of the null rays, the formula for the null rays was equal to this, R over RS minus 1 plus constant. This was for R bigger than RS. Okay. So let's go back to the T and R coordinates that we started with. And I made the choice of focusing on U, which was T plus R, plus RS log R over RS minus 1, okay, which was constant on ingoing null rays. But I could equally well have chosen another coordinate, which is, so why not instead choose V, which will be T minus R minus RS log R over RS minus 1. And this one will be constant on outgoing null rays. Okay, so the whole idea is that T, when I have these coordinates T and R, they're singular. So let's replace T by something else. And last time I replaced T by U. I kept R, but I replaced T by U. But I could equally well replace T by V. Okay, so if I do this, essentially, I'm following these outgoing null rays, and I'm, if you remember how they go, the outgoing null rays in the T coordinates, this is RS, so in the T coordinates, these outgoing null rays were doing this. So T was going to minus infinity when they before they encounter the horizon. And then there were some, of course, we had these two families inside, which were doing this. Whoops, wrong color. Which was doing this. And so picking this coordinate, it's actually clear. So if I pick V equals constant, and I follow this coordinate, so T and R coordinates are singular, but nevertheless, if I know V is constant, it will tell me which of these trajectories connects to which in the VR coordinates. Okay? Because if V is constant, and if this coordinate is regular across the horizon, I can just draw the graph of whatever V is. So let's take, for example, e.g., V equals 0. V equals 0, so that's a particular null ray. And that's given by T equals R plus RS log R over RS minus 1. Okay, so that's one particular null ray. And you can see it looks like this. So T goes like R at large R. T goes to minus infinity as R approaches RS from outside. But I can actually look at what it is inside RS as well. Sorry, I want the modulus sign there. I want modulus sign here. Okay, because I want this new coordinate V, I want it to be real inside R equals RS as well. And so if I take this formula for R less than RS, you can see, obviously, this is 1 minus R over RS if R is less than RS. And so that trajectory is actually this one, because T is going to minus infinity as R approaches RS from below. So what this is telling you is that this geodesic connects to that one. Or rather, these green curves, these green geodesics, okay, connect. So in the TR coordinates are singular, okay, but nevertheless, I can use them inside RS, I can use them outside RS, and the existence of this coordinate tells you that's how they connect. Okay? Likewise, so this would be the V equals constant. When I chose the U equals constant, it was these trajectories. So this was my ingoing trajectory, U equals constant. And these, of course, just connect onto those ones. Okay, so I could replace T by either U or V. Now, the conclusion you reach is very striking, which is that when I replace T by U, this ingoing geodesic ends up going towards R equals 0. Okay? And so that is saying that this, so remember, R becomes time, so inside RS, RS, R is the time. The ingoing geodesics end up going to R equals 0. Okay, so ingoing null geodesics go to R equals 0. And that implies that this is the direction of increasing time inside. Right? You've got this photon. It's not going to go backwards in time. It's always going forwards in time. And so actually decreasing R, well, let's write it this way. So increasing time is decreasing R. Is decreasing okay, because I send in a photon, and it goes towards R equals 0. So that this is the time, but the time goes forward from RS to R. Now, if I do the other thing, if I change to V coordinates, then time is increasing along these curves, right, outside. So I trace back the time, and suddenly the curves are doing this. So R increasing is increasing time in the other coordinates, right? So on the outgoing GD6, yep. Oh, this graph, I can draw it again. But let me just finish this point. So outgoing now GD6 have the opposite behavior so increasing increasing R. And so what's the conclusion of this? The conclusion is that depending on which of these coordinates I picked, I discovered that the direction of time inside the black hole is going either forwards or backwards. Okay? Well, they can't both be right, because time can only go in one direction. Okay? And so the implication is that actually you can continue the metric of the space-time inside RS to two different regions. Okay, so it's not just one region inside the horizon, there are actually two. Okay, in the pure black hole solution. And we'll see this very clearly when we go to a better coordinate system. But let me warn you that this V coordinates, these do not really work for the whole space-time if I have a star. Okay, so the star will, let's see, how should I draw it? Shouldn't I really need to go to this T. Okay, but let me just say here's parentheses. We'll see this later. But the second region doesn't exist for a collapsing star. Star, it only exists for vacuum Einstein equations in the complete solution of the vacuum equations. Okay, so this is confusing at this point, and it should be confusing. We've continued in two different ways, and we've got two different space-times inside RS. But hopefully all will become clear when we go to the next set of coordinates, which cover the whole space-time. Okay, I think there was a question. Yeah. T prime, yeah.
I don't understand. You had this, you drew the same null.
No, very, very different. Okay, T and R. Okay, here was RS. And the point is that T diverges. So all the null trajectories do this. They go to infinity and then come back. Right? And these other ones go to infinity and then come back. Right? In the T prime and R, the ingoing null geodesics are 45 degree lines. That's what they look like. What?
Yeah, and you also drew the.
Yeah, and the other ones, they don't go to infinity. They're perfectly fine, right? They just do this. Just make sure I get it right. The other ones do this, 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 this. Okay, so they don't have a, in these coordinates, they first of all went backwards, you know, T went backwards, and then it went forwards. In these coordinates, T only goes forwards. Okay, so very different. The only thing that goes wrong, as it were, it's not really going wrong, but the only thing that happens that's exceptional as you cross this surface is that both the ingoing trajectories, well, both sets of both null trajectories at any point end up going in. The light cone has become tipped over by gravity, and so all the light goes in. Okay, so there is no way to send a light signal from inside RS to infinity. Okay, in fact, that's the definition of an event horizon. It's a very important notion. This is a region of space-time. From which no null ray can reach infinity. Sorry, an event horizon is the boundary of a region of space-time. Of a region of space-time can reach infinity. Okay, reaching infinity is R equals infinity, where there's no. Where the gravitational field is weak. So if you're sitting inside this region, you simply can't send light out to infinity. That's why it's a black hole. We can't see inside it. If I change to the V, if I change to V and U coordinates, this would be similar, but basically the time reverse. So these trajectories would now be null, the outgoing trajectories would be null, and the other trajectories would look like this, except sort of converging on the horizon at large T prime. Both of them are regular on the horizon. Okay, so there's this sort of funny paradox that we made two different coordinate transformations and we cut two different kinds of regions. So what's going on? Well, the person who put this together was Martin Kruskal. Okay, and so Kruskal, and the paper is Physical Review, volume 119, page 1743, 1960. Okay, also well worth looking at this paper. Kruskal did this calculation as an undergraduate. He didn't realize that it was important until he became a graduate student and people told him, oh, wow, you know, we didn't know that. And so then they encouraged him to publish it, and he did. He's actually also quite famous in the theory of solitons. So what Kruskal did is something very simple with hindsight. So let's start in the region R bigger than RS. Okay, that's the region we think we understand. We haven't gone inside the Schwarzschild radius yet. And we define U equals to T plus R plus RS log R over RS minus 1. So that's the constant. That coordinate is constant on ingoing light rays. And we'll choose V as the other coordinate, T minus R log R over RS minus 1. Okay, so this is constant on outgoing null rays. And this is constant on ingoing. Okay, so we just do both. Okay, because we know when we draw any space-time diagram that the ingoing, if we pick a coordinate which is constant on the ingoing null rays, then in these coordinates, the null rays must go at 45 degrees. Okay? So as soon as you pick your coordinates so that the light rays are constant on those coordinates, then the light rays will be traveling along the lines of the coordinates. Okay? So the lines of the coordinates naturally don't show any funny behavior.
Isn't that the opposite of the way you defined U and V before?
Oh, is it? Possibly. I may have switched a sign. How did I define it before? I thought I defined U as T plus
right,
R.
Right, but you said that U was constant on ingoing and outgoing before.
Oh, yeah, sorry, that was wrong. Yeah, sorry, ingoing and outgoing. Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, it's ingoing because if this is constant, then at large R, I can forget this term, and basically T, R is minus T. So as T goes forward, R gets smaller. Yeah.
We don't think the absolute value for this one?
No, I'm just saying let's stick to this region.
Okay.
Okay, so there we believe we know what we're doing. Okay. So Kruskal's idea is let's stick to this region, change the coordinates on which both ingoing and outgoing null rays will be at fixed coordinate values. Okay, so let's just do both. And then in these new coordinates, we will continue inside the Schwarzschild radius. That's the way. So in the new coordinates, you won't have to deal with these logs. They're all gone. I mean, you change the coordinates and the logs went away. Okay. So the sickness of the old coordinates, you just forget about it. Okay, go to the new coordinates and then just use them. Okay, so we can calculate du, and this is du or dv, and these are equal to dt plus or minus dr over 1 minus rs over r. Okay, so that all the changes in going from u to v is this minus sign. And so that's the relationship between du and dv. And so now when we work out the metric, it's actually equal to minus 1 minus rs over r du dv. Plus r squared d omega squared. So I'm left with this formula in terms of r, but actually I want everything in terms of u and v. Okay, so I better solve for r in terms of u and v. And so I can see from here that, so we need to eliminate r from this formula. From here, r plus rs log r over rs minus 1. So I just subtract these two formulae. Okay, take u minus v over 2. This is u minus v over 2. And I have 2r from here, and then twice the log divide by 2, and that's equal to the left-hand side. Okay, so now I can exponentiate this formula, and so I have that r over rs minus 1 is equal to e to the minus r over rs times e to the u minus v over 2rs. Okay, so what did I do there? I just divided everything by rs, and then I pulled this over to the right-hand side, so I got a minus r over rs, then I exponentiated the left and right-hand side to get this formula. And so what this means is that actually the s squared is equal to minus rs over r. So I just have to replace this 1 minus rs over r times of minus sign with that formula. E to the minus r over rs e to the u minus b 2rs du dv plus r squared d omega squared. Mm. Okay, so to get to that formula, I've just multiplied this by R s over R. So this is 1 minus R s over R is equal to R s over R times this stuff. And then I've substituted in for 1 for minus R s over R to get that formula. Okay, so we've kind of eliminated the R, but not quite. And now we set this set capital U equals to e to the u over 2 rs times rs, okay, and capital V equal to rs times e to the v over 2 rs with a minus sign. And so our ds squared is minus r s over r, e to the minus r over r s, okay, times 4 du dv. Because du here, d capital U, will be 1 over 2 r s. Well, actually, just 1 over 2, the r s is cancelled, e to the u over 2 r s. And d capital V is 1 half, which is e to the v over 2 rs. Plus r squared d omega squared. And finally, where? Now, yeah.
Aren't you missing the sine of the dv?
Yes. I need this one. And I need that one. Thank you. So I should have had a plus here. And okay, so finally, we set u equals to x minus t and v equals to x plus t. And so then we will get the metric in a form that looks more like Minkowski space. At least where it's more obvious what the eigenvalues are and so on. So ds squared equals 4 rs over r e to the minus rs rs minus dt squared plus dx squared plus r squared d omega squared. And now the point is that we still have this R here, but R is implicitly defined in terms of U and V through the original formula we had, okay, where, okay, so we had this R over RS minus 1 is equal to E to the minus R over RS. E to the u minus v over 2 rs. Now that is just, so that's equal to e to the, so what this means is that uv gives me that exponential, e to the u minus v over 2. And so uv is equal to rs squared, right, times this exponential. And this exponential is that exponential times that factor. So it's r over rs minus 1 e to the r over rs. And that's equal to x squared minus t squared. Okay? So if you want to know what is R, you see this R depends on X and T according to this formula. And what you want to be sure of is that that formula is 1-to-1. Okay, in other words, that if I give you X and T, you can always solve this for R. Now that's that's not hard to see, because for R, at least for R bigger than RS, okay, where the place we think we really understand, R bigger than RS, this right-hand side looks like, so as a function of R, this function here is what, 0 at RS, because these two things cancel, and then it grows, this part grows linearly with RS, and then I multiply with an exponential. Okay? So the right-hand side is some positive function, and if I tell you what x squared minus t squared is, you can just read off what r is. Okay, so there's no problem in this coordinate transformation from x and t to r outside rs. It's 1-to-1. Okay, give me an x and a t, I'll tell you what r is. Okay, so that this is the metric, okay, where R is implicitly defined by this equation. This defines R of X and T. Okay, so that's our metric. Now, what's so great about this metric? Well, it doesn't have any singularities anywhere. Let's go R less than RS. And yes, I can keep this curve going. Okay, so this formula defines R as a function of X and T. Even when R is less than RS, okay? But notice that it has a minimum value, okay? In other words, X squared minus T squared is bounded below. And it's bounded below by the value where R is 0. Okay, so as I take R to 0, I cannot get any lower in X squared minus T squared. Now, that shouldn't be a surprise, because R equals 0 is a singularity. So there must be a singularity in the metric, and it's at x squared minus t squared equals to some constant. So that defines R of x and t. What about t of x and t? Likewise, we're not going to use it, but t of x and t. In other words, you can ask, what is the coordinate transformation that takes me from Schwarzschild to Kruskal coordinates? And t, little t, is just u plus v over 2. Right? If I take the formula for u and v, they both had a r plus log r. But if I add them, the r and log r terms cancel, and I just get little t. And so this is equal to rs log capital V over capital U, which is rs log x plus t over x minus t. Okay, so this is the explicit coordinate. If I start with this metric and I change to little r and little t, I'll just get the Schwarzschild metric. Okay, this is the explicit coordinate transformation from Kruskal to Schwarzschild. And so now let's sketch the metric in these new coordinates. Here's t, looks like a time. And here is x. Okay, so ingoing and outgoing null rays, what do they do in this coordinate, in these coordinates? Ingoing and outgoing radial null rays. Okay, radial means I drop this term. They don't move in angle, they're just going radially. What are the null rays in this metric? 45 degrees. Dx is plus or minus dt. Okay? So the null rays are at 45 degrees in these coordinates. That's what's so great about them. And so the null rays are just like this. Okay? Where is r equal to rs? Where is the short shell radius in these coordinates? R equals rs. What's the relationship between x and t? X is plus or minus t, okay? So that's the short shell radius. Okay. Okay, so this is r equals rs, which is the same as t equals plus x. And you see there are two solutions. R equals rs. This is t equals minus x. Now, where's the singularity? R equals 0 in crustal coordinates. So r is 0, okay? The right-hand side here is just minus rs squared. So we've got to draw the curve, x squared minus t squared equals minus rs squared, right? This is r equals 0. What does that look like? Okay, I can reorganize this, so t squared equals rs squared plus x squared. What kind of curve is that? What's a curve? Y squared is constant plus x squared. Has a name. Hyperbola. Okay, it's just a hyperbola. T against x. So that looks like this. Okay, so this is r equals 0. T equals plus square root of x squared plus rs squared. Now, there are two solutions of that, right? If you take the square root, t could be minus. So that's also r equals 0. T equals minus square root rs squared plus x squared. Okay, so this is the singularity. And it doesn't make sense to continue the space-time beyond there, because the field equations just don't make any sense. There's an unremovable singularity there, where general relativity just fails. Okay, so this is the Schwarzschild metric in crustal coordinates. What about lines of constant time? Okay, so say t is constant. That means this log is constant. So if I want the contours of constant time, they are basically where x plus t over x minus t equals constant, right? So if t is constant, this quantity is constant. What does that mean? Lines of constant time are what kind of curve in this diagram? Can you solve that equation for t as a function of x? Okay, just take this over to that side. What is this equation? It's linear, right?
So straight line.
Straight line. Okay. So lines of constant time are just straight lines. So this line here is t equals 0. This is a t equals constant line. Different slope. And when you take the limit, x goes to t, you see the slope goes to infinity, right? If x goes to t, then little t goes to infinity. And so this line here is actually t equals infinity. So no wonder our coordinates broke down. Little time was actually infinity on the horizon. Okay? And we saw that. We sent in incoming null rays, and they went off to plus infinity. right? So it's now obvious what was going on. We sent in a light ray. Nothing weird was happening at the space-time, but just the coordinate was infinity, right? This t-coordinate was just really bad because the t-coordinate only, and this line is actually t equals minus infinity. So the time coordinate increases, this little t-coordinate increases from minus infinity to some negative value, to zero, to positive values, to plus infinity. Okay, so the little t coordinate system just covered one quarter of the space-time. Okay, so now it's really obvious where the null rays are. The ingoing ones went to t equals plus infinity. The outgoing ones are like this, right? They're heading off to plus infinity. And so they went to t equals minus infinity when we continued them. But in the Kruskal coordinate, there's nothing special at that. Well, apart from it being an event horizon. You see, if I'm inside this region of space-time, I can never escape the singularity. Because the best I can do is go at the speed of light, and at some point I'll hit the singularity. Likewise, in the past, I came from the singularity, right? So I'm sitting here, and I look in my past, and my past light cone looks like that, and I came straight out of the singularity. So these are the two regions we discovered. This is the region we discovered by going to ingoing null ray coordinates. That was the region we discovered going to outgoing, and they're different regions. Okay? And they both have a singularity, one in the past, one in the future. Yeah?
So are the light rays still 45-degree lines?
Yep. A null ray, it's trivial to see what a null ray is in these coordinates. I just set ds squared equal to 0. Dx is plus or minus dt. Okay, that was the whole rationale for the choice of Kruskal coordinates. He said, let's choose coordinates in which the null rays are at constant coordinate values. There's something even more kind of weird about this, which is, you see, here's my exterior. Let's draw lines of constant r. So that's r equals rs. Lines of constant r. So if r is constant, that's saying that x squared minus t squared is a constant. What kind of curve is that? Hyperbola again, okay? But this time it's a hyperbola this way. Use a different chalk. So that was r equals rs, but r equal to some other value will be just like this. So these are lines of constant r. Okay, so r equals infinity is off there somewhere. Okay, that's r equals infinity. But we actually have another region with r equals infinity. Okay, this is also r equals infinity. I mean, when you solve this equation, x squared minus t squared is a constant, there are two solutions. And one of them is these, and one of them is those. So we've discovered a completely new region, which is over here. Okay? So there are two asymptotic regions at large positive distance from the black hole. I can either go out this way, or I can go that way. And it gets even more bizarre if I sketch that region. Yeah, go ahead.
So what if r is between 0 and rs, and that thing is again negative?
Let's see. R equals to rs. No, r less than rs is in here.
Yeah.
They're these regions. Okay? So this is r equals 0. That's r equals rs. This curve is r equals rs. So r between 0 and rs, there are again two solutions. Either I'm here or I'm there. Okay. Now it gets even funnier because, so we're discovering much bigger space-time than we expected. There's a whole new world out there. Okay. We thought we were outside the black hole, but actually if I could travel through here, I would discover a whole universe out there. Okay. I'll tell you in a moment that unfortunately this thing probably doesn't happen in nature, but it would be pretty cool if it did. So let's avoid the singularity, and let's try to sketch the geometry of this surface at t equals 0. What does it look like? So t equals 0. So what is the geometry? The geometry of the t equals 0 surface. So let's see, t equals 0. And so that is the same as capital T equals 0, right? Because little t went like log of x plus t over x minus t. So if capital T is 0, then little t is 0. So that's the way I've sketched it here. Capital T being 0 is the same as little t being 0. Now, if little t is 0, then we directly have the relationship between x and r. So x squared is rs squared, r over rs minus 1, e to the r over rs. So the peculiar thing is that as I'm coming down here, you see I'm going to rs. This point is at r equals rs. Right, because it's on the it's on that light cone. So this point is at r equals rs. It's x capital X equals capital T equals 0. Is little r equals rs. So I come down here, and I hit r equals rs, and then I keep going. So how does that happen? That r doesn't decrease beyond this point. In fact, r increases beyond this point. Okay. So r comes down to a minimum at rs, and then it increases again. Yeah.
At that point, you have an intersection of a bunch of lines of constant t.
No, the lines of constant capital T are these lines.
No,
yeah, that's just a bad coordinate. Ignore that. Doesn't matter. Little t is a bad coordinate. Don't worry about it. It doesn't even cover the space-time. So, completely a rubbish coordinate. Okay, capital T and capital X are good guys. And you see, so this is a bit peculiar. So little r is coming down, and then it's going up. Now, what is little r? Well, actually, little r is something very physical. Because if you think about the metric, the ds squared went like something times minus dt squared plus dx squared, plus r squared, the omega squared, r comes in there. So r, this little r, gives you the area of a sphere in theta pi coordinates, right? So this means that the area of a sphere of fixed r is 4 pi r squared. Okay, to compute that area, all you use is this part of the metric. So somehow we've got a space-time in which the area of a sphere, which is at radius r, okay, decreases because r is decreasing. Then r hits a minimum at r s, and then it increases again. So how can that be true? Well, the way it's true is that it looks like this. That at large r, we have a flat space. But as you come in r, you basically have a space like this. Okay, so I'm not drawing this terribly well, but this comes down here, the connect. Okay, so okay, and the minimum radius here is r equals rs. So I start off at infinity. And I travel in towards r equals 0, and I find the area of the sphere is getting smaller and smaller, and it hits some minimum. And then I keep going. I just travel through and I come out in another region of space and time where the area grows again like our sweat. Okay, so that's what's happening here. And this strange structure here is called the Einstein-Rosen ridge. Okay, and it's literally a bridge. It connects to asymptotic regions of space-time. Okay, so it's very wonderful. You can get these space-times that all have these very bizarre properties. It's going to get much worse, okay, when we do the Kerr metric. There will be an infinite number of regions of space-time. There will be closed time-like curves, so you can go and kill your father. All kinds of wonderful things. Very sadly, I mean, it should worry you if you think about it. That's really good there. I speak as a father. Very sadly, this region of space probably doesn't exist. Can anybody tell me why from this picture? But all this stuff here, and in fact this region, this whole region here is a fiction. Okay, this is a fiction. This by the way, is called region 1, region 2, region 3, and region 4. Each bounded by by these event horizons. So the only physical regions we believe are regions 1 and 2. Anybody tell me why that is? What's wrong with the other regions?
Can you point out where the regions are?
So 1, they're bounded by the event horizon. Okay, so 1 is this, is bounded by that region. Mm-hmm. So right quadrant, 2 the upper quadrant, 4 the left quadrant, 3 the lower quadrant. Okay, why do you think these ones don't exist? So let's think about how a black hole forms. Right, it forms with a collapsing star. What does the star look like on this diagram? See, the vacuum field equation is only valid outside the star. Okay, so I can hide some of this by putting a star over it. Okay, then the field equation is just the wrong one, so I shouldn't use those equations. So where does the star look like on this picture?
At the thing
node? No, the star is an object in space-time, right? So it traces out a solid object in space-time. I mean, the world lines of all its particles. It's not just there, it's everything. Yeah, but the star comes in at negative time. I start with a star, right? I got to start with a star. So let's imagine I start down here. Let's imagine that I start with a star here. So the star will fill, let's say, that region of the space-time. And so that's okay. So let's imagine the star comes in like this. Okay. So yes, there's this funny event horizon, but this is path pointing. It's not really a problem. Okay. The star. Imagine the star is just sitting here for a long time. Now let me just think. It will sit at fixed little r. Yes, I'm sorry. So actually the star will do this. If it extends outside its Schwarzschild radius, and its surface of the star will be a fixed little r. Okay, if this is something like described by Newtonian gravity, I mean essentially that little r is the correct radius, is the proper radius at large distances from the star. That's what little r is. So if you have a star that has a fixed proper radius initially, its surface will be on this trajectory. Okay, so all this will be star coming in.
Why do you draw it inside of the singularity? Like,
there's no singularity.
No, you have little r equals 0, that hyperbola.
No, this is not 0. This is little r equals constant.
Yeah.
Much bigger than RS.
Yeah, but No, I'm saying the bottom hyperbola that you drew initially white, it says that's the singularity on it.
Yeah.
It's r equals 0, so nothing can be below that, right? Below the, so there's no star like below.
No, there is. There is. To get this diagram, I used Einstein's vacuum field equations. I solved the vacuum field equations with no matter.
But r still can't be less than 0.
No. R can be anything. You've got to use the right field equations in this region.
Yeah, but
there's no.
Can you even draw it that way? Since the star is not in the vacuum, it's the star is
outside the star.
It's the star that sits in spherical coordinates that you can't have r less than 0.
You're thinking r equals 0 is a physical place. R is a coordinate.
It's the center of the star. I mean, we define it to be the center of the star.
You've got to define some coordinates inside the star. Which coordinates are you working with? We've done this whole calculation in the vacuum Einstein equations. If you want to solve the interior of a star, solve the right equations. Okay, now maybe you're going to define R equals 0 to be the center of the star. That'll be fine. And then this will be R equals 0. R equals 0 will be here.
X equals 0 and t
grows. No, don't try to use x and t. We did the coordinate transformation assuming the Schwarzschild metric, which is a vacuum solution. The metric in here is not Schwarzschild. Right? This metric is the solution of the Einstein equations with matter. It's nothing to do with Schwarzschild. Okay? Same question. You see, let me give you a charged particle, right, with zero signs. Okay, it's singular. Why? Because the electric field goes like 1 over r squared. Now give me a shell of finite size. What's the electric field in the center of the shell? 0. There's no electric field inside a charged shell. So the solution was just invalid. Okay? The solution is valid up to the surface of the shell, but then I've got some charge, so I can't use the vacuum equations anymore. So I have not derived the solution inside here at all. You can, but you've got to put the matter in and do it properly. When you do that, you find there's no singularity in a star. Right? The sun does not have a singularity in the middle. The sun is perfectly fine inside, and that's just because the Schwarzschild metric doesn't fall there. You don't seem happy.
I mean, you did a coordinate transformation that takes a coordinate we, you know, took to be the center of the star to some hyperbola in the space that you're drawing it in. So it seems like the star should really...
Don't worry about a metric that you do not know.
No, I mean, I'm not even thinking about the metric, I'm just thinking about the coordinate transformation.
Coordinates mean nothing. Why are you worried about the coordinates?
Well, if you're drawing the star inside coordinates, you need to worry about the coordinates. You can't.
Well, we haven't derived this star. You're worrying about things that don't exist. Yeah.
Shouldn't the drawing of the star go all the way to the origin of this axis, because at the constant time there's a straight line going through.
You're worrying about this?
No.
What are you worrying
about?
Constant
time is a straight line.
Which time?
I don't know, the time that we're looking at the star.
Define your terms. Which time?
If we take a snapshot in the strange coordinates of the star, shouldn't it?
Big T, little t.
Little t.
Okay. Now, little t is actually a physical time, because little t is the proper time measured by an observer at infinity. At infinity, you take the metric, the 1 over r terms go away, and so little t is the time an observer measures. So that's why if you stick a point on here, right, close to the event horizon, and I ask, according to some observer at infinity, what's the value of the time there? That's really infinite time. See, so the observer at infinity can wait to infinity, and they will never see anything beyond this surface. Okay, so, sorry, say your question again.
So, is that a snapshot of the star at constant capital T or at constant time?
It's the space-time history of the star. It's not a snapshot. Right. So if you want to take it at little t, you would take it on a slice like this. Right? Little t equals some large negative time would be a slice like that. And you would say, at my time, minus infinity, that is the star. That's what I see. That's the surface. I call t equals minus infinity. So I'm drawing the world history of the star, right? Where it is at all space-time, throughout space-time.
So if you're drawing these kind of your star in a diagram...
Except I haven't finished. So let me just finish the star, because I've just drawn the beginning of the star. The star is going to collapse at some point. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, the star will basically be sitting at some radius here. Okay, so some fixed radius. But then it will start to move inwards in radius. Okay, and then it will fall across the horizon and hit the black hole. So that's the world history of a star. It falls into its own event horizon, or it forms an event horizon, falls inside it, and hits the singularity. So all of this part of space-time is actually just a fiction. Yeah?
Could you draw a word line of a point particle in that chart? Like what it
would be? Yeah, point particle does this. It's got to be time-like, so it has to be between plus and minus 45 degrees. You can have a particle, yeah, so you can have a particle, if I take a particle and I accelerate it, okay, then I can keep it at fixed r. You see, r equals constant of these curves. If I want to stay, this is obvious, if I'm near to the sun. Remember, in this picture, I don't have any angular coordinates, so everything is kind of radial. So I'm near to the sun, and I don't have any angular momentum, right? Then, if I don't do anything, I'm going to fall into the sun. But if I turn on my rocket, that will accelerate me away from the sun. Then I can stay at fixed radius. Okay, that's fixed r. So if I sit here, I'm actually accelerating away from the sun. I need a force to do that. So a particle without any force is going to fall into the sun, or the black hole, and hit the singularity. Particle with acceleration can avoid it forever, no problem. Or you accelerate a little bit faster and you can completely escape from it. And if you put in the other angular coordinates, you see every point on this diagram is actually a two-sphere. There's theta and phi as well. If you move in theta and phi, then you can completely avoid the star. You don't have to fall into the star. Yeah?
So why do you notice that singularity on the top, not the one on the bottom?
The one on the bottom is just not there. It would have been inside the star. But the star, the solution, the Einstein equations inside the star involve a T mu nu, which is matter. You see, the rough way of thinking about this is imagine I'm solving for the Newtonian gravitational potential, right, outside a star. It's gm over r outside a star. Now, if I solve it for, so this is singular, even Newtonian gravity is singular to r equals zero, but you wouldn't say there's any real singularity in a star, because when I go inside the star, the potential here is gm of r. It's the mass inside r that counts. Now, if that m of r is 4 pi over 3 rho r cubed, so if the density is finite in the star, the mass decreases like r cubed. And so this Newtonian potential goes like r squared. It's perfectly regular. So inside here, the metric will be completely regular. There's no singularity. There's no horizon. There's nothing fun.
So I'm still confused why the region... So these diagonal lines are t is infinity and t is minus infinity.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Below t.
Yeah.
So I'm still confused why the region in your diagram below t is minus infinity is colored in.
It's not the region. The diagonal line was here.
Yeah, so shouldn't you only color in stuff for the star above that?
Nope.
How did you decide to go to the left?
Oh, I see. You're worried about all this?
Yes.
Oh, it doesn't mean anything. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, how did you decide to like color that in and not to the left of the page?
Just do that. I'm perfectly happy to forget about everything inside here. Yeah. No, I think you're right. I mean, if I did choose a coordinate T, in which I'm describing the star at large negative times, and if this coordinate T, you see, where you're wrong is you're implicitly using the short. You see, this is a bit strange because I think what this is actually wrong. Okay, the coordinate T, so a T equals constant surface. Yeah, I think we're both wrong actually. The coordinate T equals minus infinity, if I'm inside the star, a constant time should be a space-like surface. Definitely should not be null, right? This is null. The reason it's null is because we use the Schwarzschild metric, right, in which T was a bad coordinate, and so this was null. But if you're going to choose a good coordinate to describe a collapsing star, you wouldn't choose a null coordinate. It's insane, right? You choose a space-like. The surfaces of T equals constant, right, should be space-like. Okay, so basically what we should do is draw something like this, okay, where this is T goes to minus infinity, right, and they go like this. So it won't be 45 degrees.
So the point's far away from the star, that line will actually not be.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you just
or
don't
far
use.
Far away from the collapse or whatever.
Yeah, so don't use Schwarzschild coordinates inside the star. Don't use the Schwarzschild metric inside the star.
Yeah. Before you introduce this star, on yep. the region number 4,
yep.
where is time T minus small?
Yeah, it's a good question, because obviously this line is T equals plus infinity. So actually, this is T equals plus infinity, and this is T equals minus infinity.
So light rays will go like this?
No, light rays go both ways. Light rays go in 45 degrees. Ingoing or outgoing. I mean, you can worry, what is the direction of time in this part of space-time? Is it a world going backwards? Okay. Now, coordinate T is the time. So that's actually the wrong way to look at it. I mean, what I should do, look at the space-time. Keep in mind, coordinates mean nothing. Okay. But if the real question is, so little t is the time of an observer on this side at infinity. So if you say, okay, according to this observer at infinity, something happened here. Would this observer at infinity say that it happened when their clock, you know, was if one event was before the other or after the other? And if they use the same clock, they would say that something which appeared to go forward here was actually going backwards. Okay. Now, the reality is that somebody over here cannot even communicate with someone over there. All right? There is nothing happens here can ever be communicated with something out there, right? If something happens here, well, the best you can do is send a light signal, and it will never reach this region. So these two regions are causally disconnected. There's no anything that happens in this part of the space will never affect anything over here. Okay, and so don't worry about it. It's never going to affect you. It's not even real if the star picture is true. But this comes back to Chandrasekhar's point of view, I was explaining last time. So Chandrasekhar says, look, these solutions we know, that these equations we know they're right, Einstein's equations. So it gives you the set of possible universes. And this is a logical possibility. There could be a universe like this, and you can play around with it and see what it looks like.
In like popular science books and stuff, you have a Einstein rose and fish, they'll have a picture like yours there.
Yeah,
but they'll suggest that the way in which it could do magical stuff is that there's flat space time sort of curves around like this, you come back to a different point here in the universe. Are we saying that can't possibly happen because
no.
One's four and one's one?
One's
in the four region and one's in the one region.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So is that
you come out in the other region.
When you see pictures like that, are they wrong? Or?
They're wrong. Okay. Yeah. When you go into smaller r, you would come out at, I mean, okay, now even that's wrong, because I can't actually go there. I'd have to be a tachyon to get there. Okay, so nobody from here can ever reach region 4. It's just impossible.
So
So all you can do is think about what, you know, what does it look like, but I can't actually get there, because the only place I can get is to is within my future, and the, you know, either I escape off to infinity or I go into the black hole. That's it. Okay. So let me just kind of summarize some of this. So this is called the Kruskal extension of Schwarzschild. Okay, and actually, it is geodesically maximal, i.e., every geodesic can be extended to R equals infinity, or it's the singularity at R equals zero. Okay, so one notion of a complete space-time is just to say, well, consider all the geodesics in the space-time, continue them forward to infinite future on their world line, and infinite past, and where do they go? And Kruskal, you will never get out of the Kruskal space-time, okay, by continuing a geodesic, either space-like or time-like or null. I mean, this is a complete story. Okay. Whereas where I took Schwarzschild, if I continued my geodesics, my null geodesics, I entered this new region or that new region. Okay. Or a space-like geodesic, I would enter this region. And so Kruskal is the whole is a complete space-time. So these different regions have the following interpretations. One is the exterior of a black hole and a white hole. Okay, so this guy down here is sometimes called a white hole because the white hole is the opposite of a black hole, right? The black hole, once you cross the event horizon, you have to hit the singularity. The white hole, if you're outside the singularity, you've got to leave the white hole. Okay, you can't stay inside the white hole. And region 2 is the interior of the black hole. Region 3 is the interior of the white hole. Region 4 is the time reverse of region 1. And the last two of these, the white hole and the time reverse of region 1, are believed to be unphysical, believed not to occur in nature.
White hole just be a time reverse of a black hole.
Yep. So you've got a white hole, things come gushing out of it. Okay. So if there was a white hole and we lived here in this exterior region, we would just see the stuff, flux of stuff coming into our space-time, right, which we couldn't possibly explain. Because if we live here and if our past has always been outside the black hole, then we have never had access to the inside of the black hole. So we would just see stuff emerging from this which had no possible explanation. Yeah.
The black hole sends stuff to our region.
Yeah.
Would our black hole also send stuff to the region 4?
So the white hole sends stuff to us. Yeah, the black hole would be sending stuff to region 4. Yeah, that's right.
So we could have a black hole stuff disappearing from our region to the other.
You mean could? Sorry, could a black hole?
What sort of stuff does it send?
Anything. Well, it's coming out of the singularity, so who knows? Who knows? Everything breaks down at the singularity, so we don't know what comes out of singularities. Now, I should point out one thing. So if you believe this story about the star, that, you know, somehow only the part of the solution exterior to the star is to be taken seriously. So if you believe that story, then even though there's a singularity in GR, right, the field equations break down here. They don't make any sense. This is not a Riemannian, pseudo-Riemannian manifold anymore at this point. Okay, so the basic structure of the theory falls apart on the singularity. Even though that happens, it's completely hidden from view. Okay, so this is very important. So in this picture, we never see the breakdown of GR. Okay? Because all we see is what's outside the black hole. So the black hole forms, it makes this nasty singularity where GR breaks down, but we can't see that because we're living out here. And so all we can see is signals from outside the event horizon where GR is just fine. Okay? So that, there's a hypothesis called cosmic censorship. Hypothesis. Okay, and according to that hypothesis, we can never see the singularity. At the center of the black hole. I just say that. We can never see a singularity formed by gravitational collapse, more generally. Okay, so the idea is that the singularity is always clothed by a horizon, which prevents us seeing it. Okay? So this hypothesis was made by Roger Penrose in the 1960s. He's responsible for a lot of these ideas. And then various people have constructed counterexamples to it. It seems to be surprisingly close to being true, the hypothesis. But there are, if you really are pedantic about it, there seem to be ways of avoiding it, of violating the hypothesis. Namely, it seems to be possible to make an object which goes singular in such a way that you can just see the singularity when there's an arbitrarily small amount of mass associated with the singularity. Okay? So you can kind of just see the singularity, but at that point, there's arbitrarily small energy associated with it.
What do you mean by see the singularity? Like, do you mean you can look at it using
light can reach us. Okay. Light emitted at the singularity can reach us. Here it can't. Light emitted from the singularity cannot possibly reach us.
Yeah. How could you even have a singularity with arbitrarily small mass?
Yeah, I'm being very sketchy in when I say small mass. I mean, mass is a difficult thing to define. What should I say?
Well,
The point is that when the singularity forms, okay, how am I going to see it? It's got to emit some energy to get to me. But if the energy involved in the singularity is arbitrarily small, then it's going to have trouble emitting anything I can see. So it happens in a limiting, you can form a naked singularity, but only in a peculiar limit where it's actually, there's nothing to see. I can't really describe this in any more detail than that. So basically people take fields and they do calculations of what happens when these configurations of field collapse to a singularity. But you find that the majority of the energy has always fallen inside a horizon, and there's an arbitrarily small amount outside as the singularity forms. I can't say it more detailed than that. It's a very technical subject. Yep.
When you say that 3 and 4 are believed not to occur in nature, that
yep.
sounds like you don't really believe the star argument very much.
No, I do believe it.
So when you say believed, would you not consider this like a proof?
We don't know. What do we know?
So you're saying that if they do, then it's suggesting some breakdown of GR? Or
we have no idea.
Non-radial.
So basically when you solve the equation, you to do non-radial, you're actually going to have to solve the geodesic equation, because ds squared should be zero, but that does not uniquely specify the trajectory. So when we solve the non-radial geodesic, we're going to we did this for bending of light around the sun. So roughly speaking, what's going to happen is fairly obvious. Okay, non-radial, it'll come in, and if it misses the sun, misses the black hole, it's just going to sail off to infinity. If it comes in and it grazes the event, actually it's not entirely obvious what happens. I'll sketch what happens. So here's the black hole with R equals RS. If I send in a non-radial geodesic and it misses the black hole, nothing much happens. We get a little bit of bending of light. Okay, we computed this bending of light, in fact. If it comes in, so this, then it turns out that there's a special radius, R equals to 3/2 RS. Okay, 1.5 RS. If you send in a light ray, well, at R equals 3/2 RS, it's possible for a light ray to be in a circular orbit around the black hole. Yeah, you see the back of your head. So you just look there and you'd see the back of your head. Okay, so R less than 3/2 RS, the orbits all spiral in to the all spiral into the black hole. R bigger than 3 RS, they spiral out. Less than 3/2 RS, they spiral in. Those are for tangential GDs. Okay. Do I mean that? Yeah, that's right. So if I set up a tangential geodesic inside 3/2 RS, it will have come out of the black hole and then it will spiral. I mean, both ways it'll go into the black hole. So, so in fact, Latham Boyle, who works at PI, he's recently proposed a signal of strong gravity, where you have a, I think he's going to teach you something, maybe cosmology. I think Latham's going to teach cosmology. So what he proposed is that imagine I've got this black hole. Now, black hole is a very powerful accretor of matter. Okay, so there's all this junk falling in to the black hole, like in our galaxy. Have you seen the movie of the black hole in the center of our galaxy? Have any of you seen it? Just look at it on the web. I mean, it's a real movie. It just shows the stars orbiting this black hole. And one of them, about 10 years ago, you know, so just a sequence of photographs of where the star is, and one of them about 10 years ago came really near the black hole. And so you see it traveling along, and then all of a sudden it speeds up and really has this violent kick from the black hole. I mean, it's pretty convincing. There's something going on there. Anyway, so stuff is falling into the black hole, gas and stars, and they're all being accreted by the black hole. So his idea was, imagine there's some particularly violent event, like a shock, right, or a collision between two incoming stars or whatever, and imagine it happens over here, then the light travels to us and we're, you know, we're looking at it. I'm over here. Well, we'd see one flash of light, but there could also be light that went around the back of the hole and came later. And so one of the signals of strong gravity would be that you'd see the event twice. Okay, and from that you could figure out things like the mass of the black hole and so on. So he calls it, I think, blinking black holes.
Couldn't we see it more than twice?
What?
Couldn't we see it more than twice?
You can, but it turns out there's an exponential de-amplification.
Okay, so the third blink is...
Yeah, so you could see that, but the trouble is that the light is always spreading out. And so, in fact, even the second signal is exponentially de-amplified, but it's, I think, by a factor of 100 or something. It can be a measurable thing, but the second time around it would not be measurable.
Yeah. Is it possible to get a similar signal for something that's not a black hole?
No, it's not. It's only when you form the black hole that... the special thing about the black hole is that there is a circular orbit for photons. Neutron star doesn't have enough gravity to do that. So basically, because the neutron star is about the GM over the 2 GM over RC squared on the surface of the neutron star is about 0.1. To make the circular orbit, you need the 2 GM over RC squared to be... you need R to be 3/2, so you need it to be 4/3, right? So 2GM over RC squared is equal to 1 on the horizon of a black hole. For a neutron star, it's about 0.1. To get a circular orbit, as I told you, that happens actually at R equals to 3GM. So circular orbit, you need this to be 2/3. Needed to be greater than 2/3. 0.1 isn't big enough. So neutron star is just too big. Okay, lots of questions. So we've been going slower than I hoped, but that's fine. So I think I wanted to tell you one other thing. Let me just do that very quickly. So a physical question, you see, black holes of masses of about anything up to about 10 to the 7 solar masses are very common in the universe. Essentially, every large galaxy has a black hole in the center. That's what observations show. Okay, so these things are really everywhere. And in fact, over the last few years, black holes have been discovered in the outskirts of galaxies too. So when you look at big spiral galaxies, there are many black holes actually distributed in the spiral lines. They're smaller. They're 10 solar masses, 100 solar mass black holes are spread throughout the galaxies. The really big ones are in the center. So a physical question you can ask is, let's say we go to one of these black holes, okay, and we decide, you know, we're so passionate about physics, we want to really see this. And so we go inside the horizon, okay? How long will we have before we hit the singularity? Okay, so that's a very easy calculation. Okay, so the survival time inside a black hole. Okay, now we can use the coordinates little t, little r for this. Nothing wrong with them. They broke down at the event horizon, but inside the event horizon, they're fine. They work in this region perfectly well. Okay, so we can actually use t and r inside rs. You can do it in any coordinate system you like, but the tr coordinates were certainly only singular at r equals rs, so don't throw them away. I mean, you can still use them if r is less than rs, they're still fine. It's just you have to bear in mind that r is really the time, and t is more like a radial coordinate. So so we have d tor squared equal to plus 1 minus rs over r dt squared minus 1 minus rs over r dr squared inverse plus r squared d omega squared. So that's the proper time along any, I can use that to calculate the proper time along any world line. And and let us assume dt or t dot. So this is dt d tau. Yes, dt d tau equals d theta d tau equals d phi d tau equals 0. Okay, why am I going to do that? You'll remember that this actually is the energy, right? When we have a metric that is independent of one of the coordinates, then the corresponding momentum is conserved. And so the corresponding momentum is just T dot. And so that's E, the energy. And I can set that 0. Likewise, I can set theta equals pi over 2 always, and I can the angular momentum, if I set that 0, I can set this number 0. So I can do that. And that's a good thing to do, because actually, these terms are both negative in Ditor. So these, if these are non-zero, they'll just make it worse. Okay? So you can try moving in... sorry, did I say that? I don't mean that. Yeah, that's correct. Sorry. This term is negative, remember, r is less than rs. Okay, so this is negative, and this term is positive, because r is less than rs, so this number is negative, so this term is actually positive. So if these were non-zero, they would make the time shorter. Okay, so you could try moving in t, which is really a radial direction. It'll just make it worse. You can try moving an angle. It will just make it worse. So the best thing you can do, if you want to survive for a long time, is just stay exactly where you are in those coordinates. Okay? So the best you can do is to... So these things are the best you can do. Okay, so in that case, detour is just equal to the square root of this guy. So it is dr, and I'll absorb the minus sign inside that 1 over r thing, rs over r minus 1 square root. Sorry, that's a dr here. Okay, and so the total time, after crossing the event horizon at RS, the total time is integral from 0 to RS dr over the square root of RS over R minus 1. That's an integral you can do, and it turns out it's pi over 2 RS. And so this is equal to 10 to the minus 5 seconds times the mass of the star over the mass of the sun. Okay? So if you had a black hole, remember RS, I'm just using here that RS is 2GM over C squared. And then I do the calculation for the mass of the sun, but I can write down that general formula for any mass. So if the black hole is the mass of the sun, you last 10 to the minus 5 seconds inside the black hole. If it's the mass, if it's 10 to the 7 solar masses, you might last 100 seconds. Okay, so this could be the most expensive journey you would ever take, but you say, I really want to see the inside of the black hole. And so you cross the event horizon, you've got 100 seconds. And then you will hit the singularity, and when you study the singularity, what really happens to you is that it's anisotropic, okay? Basically because radius is time, okay, inside the black hole. And so what's happening is that these directions of space, r is going to zero. These directions are going to zero, right? This direction, r is going to zero. Sort of lengths in this direction are going to infinity. So what happens is that I'm crushed in the angular directions, and I'm stretched to infinity in the time direction, which is now a radius. Okay, so you become very, very long and thin as you hit the singularity. Okay, and so that's how you would die. A very, very long, thin person. Okay. But as you cross the event horizon, nothing funny would happen. You'd be perfectly fine. This is an example. So inside the black hole, if you want to live long, you stay where you are. You don't move. Okay? You don't move in radius or angle. Outside a black hole, how do I make my life as long as possible? Do you know that? I'd like to live as long as possible. How do I do that? In relativity.
Move as fast as you can.
You move as fast as you can all the time, okay? Because you know dtor squared is dt squared minus dx squared, right? So if dx is zero, then I'm going to have tor equals t. So if I just sit there, I'll have dtor equals t. But if I want my proper time, tor, the time that will show on my watch, if I want that to go as slowly as possible, I move. So dx is not zero. That makes the time shorter. That's the twin paradox, right? Somebody who runs off to a star at nearly the speed of light and then comes back will be much, much younger than us when they come back. If you're lazy, you get old. You want to stay young, keep moving. But outside the black hole, inside the black hole, it's the opposite. Yep.
It won't seem to you like you're very old, right? Because not much time has passed.
No, that's what staying young seems like. You just look around, everyone else getting old. So if I do this every day, if I jump backwards and forwards all the time, all you guys are going to get old and I'll be really young. Optimum is to go back and forth at the speed of light, right? Then I won't, I'll just see you getting so old so quickly and nothing will happen for me. So it says stay active. Okay. All right.
I'm a little bit older than my team.